It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland and the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
Getting over a little bit of a cold and cough and...
It's that season. Again.
But is it the season for counseling young people? Always. Got time for young people in our lives. And you actually do work with quite a bit of counseling with teens and young adults. And you wanted to address that subject this week.
Yeah, particularly older teens and young adults. I know from experience, you have kids, don't you, Mark?
I do not.
You don't? Okay. So we have the one, and that turned out to be enough. My parents had six. I don't know how they did it.
Wow.
So we had the one daughter, and I have experienced firsthand, some of the pain and disappointment that kids have no idea how deeply they hurt their parents. Mm. Just being kids sometimes and young adults, you know, we're just, for us, I remember as a young adult getting to that age where I thought I was putting into place the things that my parents had taught me. Not that I had them down in front of me, but, you know, we grow up and our parents, under our parents' tutelage, and we have just broad assumptions of life based on the things that, loosely on the things that we've been taught. It's not like we really have a handle on those values or really understand them. So we're just going on autopilot. Mm-hmm. And then we hit adulthood and we're out of high school and now we're making adult choices. And even for a while, I think in my life as a young adult, I was still kind of really on autopilot and not going, and I'm thinking of an airplane now, an autopilot flying into the mountains. And,
literally autopilot.
I just recall making a lot of mistakes and having a form of order in my life based on things that I'd been taught, but not really understanding it, not really putting a lot of thought into it. And those kind of things, then it was a little bit like, experience is the best teacher. I think that kind of that motto that we have comes from this sort of an idea where we have a lot of these things. Experience is the best teacher. When I feel the heat, I see the light. All kinds of things that remind us of the kinds of creatures that we are, where we seem to have to learn the hard way. Anyway, getting back to what I see in counseling, young people will come in, parents will be very disturbed. And I'm not talking about anger, I'm talking about hurt and worried.
Right.
You know, just worried because their kids are going off in this direction or that direction, or exhibiting depression, anxiety, even sometimes schizophrenic
behavior. We were saying some of those more serious problems do start to show up in the late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, and I want, that's kind of what I want to talk about today. I want to sort of talk to the parents and do a little bit of normalizing, and also toward the end of the show, I want to talk about kind of the way I handle these things, because I think that when I'm the parent of a child who's going that way, boy, I really want a quick answer. I want a quick and sure answer. And so we see a lot of young people being sent to psychiatrists eventually. Parents usually go through a short list, and then kids will wind up in the psychiatry. Well, why not? Because a pill certainly does kind of take the wind out of their sails. And that's maybe better than no answer at all. But the real answer, we have to go pretty deep for the real answer. And you're right, the depression, anxiety, bipolar is one that we hear a lot about today.
Well, also, I've heard that suicide is one of the leading causes of death amongst teenagers and young adults.
It's very high. Mm-hmm. And addictions, mm-hmm. sexual deviation, those kinds of things are. They're on the increase, and they generally onset, they more frequently onset in the late teens and early adulthood. And why is that so, and what can we do about it? So how we got there really is a deeper question than maybe a lot of parents have put thought into, because we have to consider the world that these kids are growing up in, even Christian kids in Christian homes. it's possible for us as parents, and I know that I did this without realizing it. It's possible for Christians to live a kind of a form of Christianity that turns into almost kind of a Christianized existentialism, where I really am making using myself as the sort of the guiding light of what makes sense, and I'm building outward. Mm. So a parent, Christian person might think, well, no, I'm pretty grounded in the Scripture, but I know from experience, having grown up in a church in a Christian home, that we can have a working knowledge of the Scripture and yet not base all of our decisions on that working knowledge.
Right.
We can base a lot of our decisions on common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids grow up under that almost like a dichotomy or a dualistic approach to life, where we kind of reach for scriptures in sort of emergencies or something like that. But by and large, we kind of fly by the seat of our pants mm-hmm. and common sense. And without realizing it, what we're raising them in sort of a secular humanism where
Absolutely.
The intelligence is vested here in the adults, or wisdom is vested in the adults. And so without even realizing we do that, we kind of help in this kind of confused, we call it post-modernism, which is, just people feeling bad that they didn't get what they thought they should get and blaming other people for it. It's, skepticism and rationalism and no God, no moral
and
base.
And the sense of entitlement is stronger than ever
certainly.
In our generation, yeah. in younger generations.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of that. I'm thinking of the Marxism and the Nietzsche and all these the existentialists who, these were typically people too who were loners. They weren't really relational, any of them. And so that was one of the things that we've talked a bit about on this show. Lots of relationship is such a fundamental part of our humanness that when we're isolated, alone, we come up with these kind of quirky ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a lot of that, and this is the way kids are growing up. And it really does seem to, it does make have a huge impact on them as they get older, and they start to get out into the world where they're having to make decisions, and they look in their tool bag that they've grown up with, and they find that in their way of thinking, those tools just don't work. And then the other thing is it's different now than it was 50 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah. When I was going up in that age, it was, it was like 40, 45, 50 years ago when I was coming through those, mid-20s and that, or early late teens. It wasn't so difficult. The world wasn't so difficult. You could make a lot of mistakes, and it didn't seem like it was going to have that big of an effect. Not like today.
Mm.
It was easier to find work. It was easier to go back to school if you didn't make it the first time.
Sure.
Or something. You didn't have to have an all-college education to make a good income. Not so competitive in the job market. All those things have changed now, along with this whole postmodern no God, no absolutes, no hope. You're on your own kind of a thing. So it's no wonder that at that age we see the onset of so many of these.
Well, it's time to launch. We've heard the term failure to launch.
Mm-hmm.
They're at a point in their life where they're supposed to be able to launch, and they're not launching because they can't handle the real world.
Right. And then you see, and one of the things in connection with that would be we see kids still at home at 20,
30, living in the basement.
yeah. And still kind of not being able to figure life out. Of course, as I said just previous to that, that it's more difficult now. I know young men who are in their mid-30s, maybe later 30s, that have just decided maybe going into the service is a good starting point.
Really?
Yeah.
Later 30s going into the service.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is something you would have expected, in previous generations at 18 years old, and now it's
in the 38.
Now it's this, and it just to me speaks to the confusion and the uncertainty and the insecurity, all of which are diagnosed in these various diagnoses that we have here: depression, anxiety, bipolar. But the thing about once we get one of these diagnoses, that sort of puts it in a different realm. It's almost as though, well, now that explains why I feel bad. I have depression, instead of just realizing that that's only another name for my symptoms,
right,
or bipolar, or it's sort of like once I get into that, it's sort of like that far left lane, the commuter lane, where once I get over there, I can take my foot off the gas. It's that diagnosis explains why. So now I'm just going to live with it.
You're under the opinion that those things are way overdiagnosed.
Yeah, they are overdiagnosed. Mm-hmm. And the diagnosis, I think, again, we need to remember as lay people, we need to remember that the diagnosis is just a term for the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, let's go into that a little bit more. And your notes here, you've got this is how it appears. Mm-hmm. Parents feel helpless. The
kids are unreachable. Kids seem unreachable. Yeah. So part of it is the age change. As kids get older, a lot of times it's difficult for parents to keep up with the kind of the evolution of their parenting requirements, because you know kids are 5, 6, 7 and we're parenting them in a certain mode, and then they're in the 15, 16, 17, and sometimes parents don't get on the train quick enough to realize the parenting has evolved. I can't parent this young man or young woman the way I did the boy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
They're transitioning into an adult to adult thing, and the parents either are too busy at that time, maybe sometimes or whatever. And not to blame the parents, things have changed. It's almost a double income society that we live in almost entirely.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a power shift. Kids realize as they get into their late teens and early 20s that they have some power now. They have when an 18-year-old son tells his mom, no, I'm not going to, it's a lot more than when the 5-year-old kid
right.
said, no, I'm not going to, and you can give him a little swat and get him going in the right direction. So this is a little different. So there's a power shift, and it's a different game, different rules, and then the generation gap where each side believes that I really can't communicate to them. We're speaking a different language, and our values are so far apart.
Mm.
So all of those things together, you know, they kind of feed into that hopeless feeling that the parents have. So parents go down this list of options. Typically, they'll first of all, we'll try to reason. You know, we'll sort of back off on the heat, and we'll just try to reason. And I think a lot of times kids see that reasoning as one of the things that they'll read into it is just it's a lighter touch, but it's the same message. You know, you're still trying to hem me in or guilt me into into following your way. Or a lot of times young people see the hypocrisy, and there is hypocrisy. We have to be honest as parents,
sure.
You know, that we've raised our kids a lot of times with maybe we haven't said it, but we felt that they should do what we say just because we said it. And then we go and do something, act differently. You know, we
mm-hmm.
tell them you shouldn't talk that way, and then mm-hmm. we talk that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll try it. And then thirdly, the whole generation gap thing too. So they'll try to reason and it'll be read off. It generally fails or
mm-hmm.
quite often fails, the reasoning part. That is, reasoning is a great thing. But if reasoning is a tool that I'm trying to use to rein a person in that is bound and determined to go a different direction, by that time, a lot of times parents get frustrated and the reasoning doesn't. Reason kind of caves in on itself. We've got some more here.
Yeah.
We'll go over there when we come back from the break, I think.
Okay, well, we are talking about counseling and coaching young adults, the process of counseling young people. Daniel will get into some things that he does in his practice to help young people here in just a moment. We do need to take a break, but before we do that, Daniel, why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with
yeah.
you?
Yeah, call me at 425-778-6169. That's 425-778-6169. And people also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you'll also find a podcast of this show and previous shows.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast from Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with a word regarding the many faces of anger. The key to managing anger is to recognize it when it doesn't look like anger. Otherwise, we find ourselves resisting anger when it wears one face, but then embracing it when it wears another. From personal experience and professional training, I understand this. I can help you recognize the faces of anger and teach you tools of effective management. Contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, or call 425-778-6169. 6969.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey as well. Of course, we all were young people at one time in our life. Young people seem to be more disturbed than ever, though, in today's culture. Daniel addressing that this week and how he works with young people in his practice.
Right. Now, as we broke off here for the break, we were talking about a kind of a short list that parents probably typically go through when they're trying to rein that young adult in. And we're talking about an age for probably from 18 through the, or 17, 18 through the mid, sometimes the mid-20s or sometimes even beyond that, but primarily these early 20s, late teens, early 20s. So reining them in, they'll start with reason, and that often does not work for the reasons that we had previously talked about. And then there's the tendency to try to revert back to the strong arm, try to go back to tactics we've used before, do it because I said.
Because I said so.
And that even makes it worse. That seems to make the separation wider. Then we will get to a point where we begin to look for answers outside of the home.
Youth pastor, you fix him.
Yeah, pastor, right. Youth pastor, sometimes community resources.
Daniel, you help him.
that it can be a counselor. Sometimes the parents will try to be, does anybody, how can I get my son or my daughter a job? And then eventually counseling. Counseling is kind of a little bit down the list because it does still kind of carry a stigma. And when the young person being pushed toward counseling, they can even at that point sometimes internalize it. Oh, counseling. So now
I've run away from home.
Yeah. Yeah. Or now I've done it. Counseling. Right. And then probably lastly, the last resort, or maybe for some parents, they get there pretty quick is to contact a psychiatrist and
medication.
Try to get
well,
some
actually,
medication.
That's a first resort a lot of times in this society, it seems like,
it's getting, yeah, the list is getting shorter. It is becoming a shorter list, yeah. And they're beginning to just
go to the medication.
Go right at that. What we need to understand is there's different between the brain and the mind. These medications, they affect the brain. And a lot of these emotional, particularly at their offset or their onset, these emotional things are not so much a brain problem as a mind problem. They're happening in the mind. They're a psychological thing, not a medical.
Not a chemical thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Although, certainly, they have a chemical counterpart.
But which comes first, the chicken or the egg there? Is it the behavior that's causing this mind problem, or is it the mind problem causing the behavior?
Right. And, of course, once you take the pill and it restricts the behavior, it's so easy to say, well, that... and maybe even to believe whether that was the problem or not, it seems to be the solution. So we're sticking with that. But even in that, these young people have to learn the tools of coping with life. And what I like to see, and I tell parents, probably at this age, I'm dealing directly with a young person, but a lot of times the parent is still kind of involved, still kind of hovering, and because they want the best for their child. So one of the things that I have get across to them is if there's a medication, I like to see it at the lowest dosage for the lowest period of time, and what it's for is just to keep the boat from rocking while we learn the tools to avoid the emotional meltdown and to get moving on in life.
Well, let's get into some of those tools, the ways that you actually work with young people in your counseling practice.
Well, after the medical issue or the medication issue, the problem is invariably rooted in fear and shame. And that what that means is that it's a spiritual problem. And for Christians, that should be kind of a refreshing thing to hear, that a lot of these emotional things and even schizophrenic behaviors initially can be, they don't have to be brain damage or, that they're emotional things and they are spiritual problems. They have to do with fear. Fear factors are, of course, initially our mortality is the great fear factor. And then because of that, primarily at this particular age, it's the change in the support system and the networking system and the security. It's the kind of onrushing of uncertainty of the future and future success. It's change in the culture and a lot of times the relevance of faith. And I will ask young people that when we're counseling at some point, early on, I'll get to the question of what is the relevance of your faith, because I need to know if that's a direction that we can go, a powerful direction that we can go in talking about this. And of course, I have some young people that aren't from a Christian home and don't really want to talk about that. Nevertheless, when we start talking about the meaning of life, which is fundamental to good mental health, one of the things that comes up is the fact that you have to have a fix on reality out there that makes all of the different problems and situations in your life, brings them all into line and all into perspective and makes sense out of all of them. If you don't have that, then you're running around putting out fires.
Yeah. Well, so you'll start there with a lot of young people is try and get a sense of what their faith is, or lack thereof.
Yeah. In fact, I don't even have to couch it as a Christian faith, but just, you know, what is the thing? Yeah. What is your worldview? What is the thing in your life that makes all of these problems make sense? And of course, their answer would be, well, I don't have that. Mm. Well, then eventually
we find that questions of faith is kind of a crisis of faith, kids. So you might deal with a lot of kids who come from Christian homes, per se, who are not, now this young person is not sharing their parents' faith. Even though mom and dad are strong Christians, the kid kind of feels like, I just disagree with that.
Yeah.
Is that, that might be causing some friction. Probably it does.
it's a lot of times it is, you know, because you can. If the child had, we got to start calling these young adults. If the young adult had a real grasp on that faith, and really did see that, you know, God, Christ, the eternal purposes as the lens through which all of the rest of his life made sense, if that was his worldview. Then he wouldn't be, or she wouldn't be, in this situation where the emotions were being overwhelming and they were kind of getting off course and sort of losing their direction. Mm. So the very fact that they're there, yeah, does indicate that although maybe they have grown up in a Christian home and they've heard these things, they haven't really synthesized them or internalized them into their life, and they're not really owning them, and that's what a big part of this is. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing too, Mark, that happened to my daughter, and I was reading of a biography of a well-known television news anchor person who she grew up, her father had strong faith, and as long as her father had strong faith, she just assumed the truth, but she went through a time in her middle and late teens where her father had some real doubts and was going through a time of depression and discouragement himself and had to refind his faith. And that short period of time was enough to throw her completely off, and she lived many of her adult years as an atheist before coming back, simply because she saw her father's faith shaken and was assuming that his strength was her strength, in a sense. She was sort of leaning on that and she hadn't come to the place where it became her own personal faith. And that's really what we're talking about. So the fear factors have to do with that. And then the shame factors, of course, are similar to the fear factors, except that they're internalized. You know, and the fear factor would be, I need to feel valued. And the shame factor would be, I have no value. Mm-hmm. And so shame is a message about myself. It's an internalized message of lack of worth. Well, so we all have fear and shame, and it's not surprising that it surfaces for that age group then.
Well, as we wrap up here, tell us a little bit about some of your repair tools.
Yeah, so here's how I approach that, and I've suggested it through the show, but one of the things that I emphasize is purpose over process. Excuse me, purpose over process. When people come for counseling, they usually want to fix the process because that's what hurts. But the purpose is what guides the process. And if they have not identified the process or that ultimate meaning out there in life that brings all the rest into order, if they haven't done that, then no process is going to feel that it's working because it's not lining up with any purpose. It's like having a job that doesn't have any meaning. I can't imagine one now, but you know, maybe somebody can give me some ideas about a job or something that has no meaning or something like that. The other centeredness is another thing that is fundamental You know, the Bible says that faith works by love, and love casts out fear. Well, what is love? Is this an emotion that we have to contemplate and try to, if we can sense that emotion, sort of trap it and internalize it? No, love is serving other people. Love is being invested in other people. So self-centeredness is part of the root of this downward spiral. Other-centeredness is pure love, true love, and it casts out fear, and it does away with a lot of these symptoms. I work on broadening the personality, that's not just a platitude. There are some specific things, three specific things we do to broaden personality, to organize a person's life, and then spiritual pursuit. Those are sort of in general what my approach is, and I would just probably say that when parents have a young person that they bring in, you need to be patient in the process because it's not as simple as answering a simple question or putting one piece in place. It has to do with from the foundation up, and so this can take sometimes months, and it needs to be a thing where the young adult is taught some things and then beginning and then put in a place where they practice and they get better at it.
Well, a lot of these principles sound like what you work on adults with too, and so with young adults,
I wonder.
You're just trying to get nipped in the bud earlier before they have to see you as an older adult and they've got the same problem. So great stuff as always on the Sound Mind broadcast. Daniel, if people need help with their young person, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, you can call me at 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com, where we'll find podcasts of these shows, and also I should remind offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay. Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast today here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.